Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Couple minutes after 9 a.m., January 23rd, 2024. With me today is Senator Olson, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, Senator Wilson. Senator Hoffman will be joining us shortly. He gets his coat hung up. And then Senator Bishop has got another conflict, so he'll miss this morning's meeting. Today, we're going to go ahead and continue kind of an overview of Senate Bill 186 and Senate Bill 187, which is the operating and the capital budget. We've got presentation that was being delivered from the Office of Management and Budget, the director, Ms. Lazy Sanders. She's going to come forward and walk through those slides. And then we will continue on the presentation with OMB, I think. Or not OMB, but Ledge Finance. Ms. Sanders, can you pick it up on slide 15, I guess we're at.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders, Office of Management and Budget Director. With the committee's indulgence, if I might, yesterday in my probably nerves, I misspoke. I may have quoted one number as being 900 million when it should have been 900,000. Thank you, Senator Wilson. In addition, I received clarification from the Department of Public Safety on the prior slide. There is funding for four positions related to the missing and murdered Indigenous persons. The funding for those positions is not non-permanent positions, as I stated on the record. Those are full-time commissioned investigators. So I just wanted to make sure, correct the record. And with that, I will start where we left off, which was on slide number 15. This is a continuation of the FY 2025 capital budget requests. These are just highlights of a few items that are worth noting in the governor's budget. So within the Department of Administration, there's just over $2 million as continued investment in the state's payroll system. This is the second year of a capital project that was started last year to improve payroll processing and ensure that our employees in the state are paid timely and accurately. In the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, I'd like to note there is a typo on this this bullet. The state has $1 billion of federal receipts that it's coming to the state for the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, also known as the BEAD program. The slide before us says development, and that is an error. There is $5 million as a FY 2024 supplemental for the Wrangell Dam Safety and Stabilization Improvement Project. As many of you are aware, in November there was a natural disaster, and the community has requested, and the governor has included $5 million to address that dam and improvements that are necessary for that dam. The budget this year includes $2.5 million as a grant to the Alaska Travel Industry Association as they continue marketing strategies for travelers to Alaska. And lastly, I'll note in the Department of Commerce, we have $1.5 million of Regulatory Commission of Alaska receipts. They have a very antiquated case management system that we are working to replace. Within the Department of Fish and Game, there are a few items I'm going to note. The first is the replacement research vessel for the Gulf and Bering Sea. This will be to purchase and outfit the replacement vessel for conducting marine research and stock assessment projects. This is replacing the research vessel Pandalus that was deemed unseaworthy and disposed of. There are two salmon research projects that are being requested. One is $2 million for stock identification of salmon harvested in the South Peninsula fisheries. This is a continuation of a research project that was completed from 2006 through 2009, and so would provide a second year of funding to continue to build up that data. Also, there is a continuation from last year, an additional $1.3 million for the Alaska Marine Salmon Program in research efforts for the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Ms. Sanders. The first bullet under the Department Administration to expand and complete the digitalization payroll services and recruitment. My understanding was that was sort of done in about 5 years prior to this time period. And just wondering, are we still doing paper timesheets, and are we still one person short of missing payroll for the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'm not familiar with the five-year comment. I'm sorry. I would have to talk with the department about that.
So, if I could, Mr. Chair. My understanding was that we sort of started this digitalization and payroll services and process about 5 years, maybe FY 16 to 18, somewhere in that time period. And so just wondering what, and that was not fully completed, so how are we going to expand something that wasn't first fully implemented?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'll have to follow up on that. I don't have that information as far as prior years. I know that we're working very closely with payroll services to ensure that no payrolls are missed. The Department of Administration's Division of Finance is completing supplemental runs for any payrolls that may need to be addressed or corrected. And so our goal is to ensure that no one misses a payroll.
Thanks, Chair.
Senator Kuehl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Sanders, so will this get IRS lifted to the cloud so that we have employees doing their own timesheets, or will we still have employees doing timesheets to a portal on to finance, additional process?
Through the chair, Senator Kuehl, if I could call on a lifeline, if Leslie is on the line, Admin Services Director for the Department of Administration, he may be able to, there's a lot of details running around in my mind, and I don't want to get projects missed up.
Yes. Who are you asking for?
Mr. Leslie Isaacs.
Mr. Isaac, are you online? I don't see him here initially on this.
Apologies. We can follow up for the committee.
He could get back to us.
Yes, absolutely.
So I got a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. See, we got some grants for the Alaska Travel Industry Association for Tourism, ASME. Dealing with our fisheries. We're facing economic turmoil in our fishing industry we haven't seen for at least 20 years, probably longer. It looks and appears to be substantially worse than it was 20 years ago when we had the salmon debacle. So is there thought giving some assistance to ASME so they can hopefully penetrate the U.S. market and get out of reliance on China, which is what I think the industry wants to do?
Chair Stedman, in the 2025 budget, there is not additional general funds provided to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. They did receive $10 million in the current fiscal year that we're operating in, but no additional funding in the next year.
I would ask that you might want to consider that as a in your amendments that are coming. We don't know how bad that situation is, but we've never faced anything this ugly before, at least 20 plus years, if not substantially longer than that. So we'll be having some hearings later on trying to figure out what to do in the operating budget and the limited role that the state has, what assistance we can help, because it affects all of our coasts, all the way down from Nome all the way to Dixon Entrance. And then another quick question, dealing with fish and game, there was a liquidation of an old vessel in 24 and a request to replace one for $7.5 million. What happened to the proceeds from the old ship, and where did it go, if you happen to know? And then what would be the life expectancy of the new ship?
Chair Stedman, I would need to defer to the Department of Fish and Game if we have Bonnie Jensen, Admin Services Director, online. I don't recall if that vessel was sold or just disposed of, as in it was unseaworthy. So I would need to.
Ms. Jensen, could you help the OMB director with some information dealing with Fish and Game, please, and the vessel?
Yes, for the record, my name is Bonnie Jensen. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Fish and Game. Chair Stedman, we do have capital surplus language in the budget, but I would have to get back to the Division of Commercial Fisheries to get the exact dollar amount.
That's fine. You can get back to us. We want to take a look at the targeted life expectancy of the new ship. It seems like the other ship we had, not in Fish and Game, but had a truncated life that some of us are concerned to. It might have been more related to maintenance issues than design issues. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Jensen, I'd like to follow up on the chairman's comments regarding the disaster situation of the fisheries in our state. Would you concur with that statement that he made, or what is the department's position on what the status of commercial fisheries is in the state of Alaska?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, we are looking into the salmon downturn all over the state. There are multiple projects, including the Alaska Marine Salmon Program and other federally funded disaster projects.
Well, I represent one of the largest fishing districts in the state of Alaska, if not in the United States. And I would say that in the 30 years that I've been here, this is the most disastrous situation. The fishery ended several months ago, and hopefully you can get up to speed so we can address the concerns of this most important industry. To the director, the request for $2.5 million for the tourism industry, is that industry in distress as disastrous as the fisheries industry?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't believe I would categorize that grant funding for the tourism is in the same category as a disaster for fisheries.
In fact, it wasn't last year one of the top five highest tourism destinations for Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, that is, I would say, an accurate statement.
Senator Stedman's over here.
Senator Hoffman. Sorry.
I could do both roles. But
sorry about that.
The problem, I think, is that do you remember or recall what the level of funding for the tourism industry was last year? Was it $2 million?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, it was higher than $2 million.
Okay. I'll be taking a look at that since I have the capital budget and I have the Fish and Game budget. And hopefully we can at least address the disaster situation for the fisheries. And from my viewpoint, and I think the chairman would agree, that the fisheries industry needs much more assistance in getting back on its feet than the tourism industry, which is already on its feet and moving ahead with leaps and bounds. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just a brief note before we go on to the next page. I think, Ms. Sanders, when you have time, it'd be nice to get briefed on the status of our fishing loans to our different various departments and other related areas within the fisheries, because we'll invite some of those folks in to lay that out for us. The concern, obviously, is late payments within the industry. From what I understand, there's late payments going into the processors, folks that owe money to the processors, And then there's a lot of citizens that have borrowed capital through state-backed loans and so on and so forth. So we need to get a handle on how extensive this problem is sometime over the next couple months.
Noted. Thank you.
Okay. We'll go on to page 16, please.
So slide 16 is just wrapping up a few additional notes. For capital projects, there is just under $4 million requested for the Department of Natural Resources for silviculture treatments and pre-commercial thinning. $2 million of this would fund purchase and planting of commercial conifer seedlings in areas where timber has been removed. And $1.5 million would be allocated for thinning and in southeast areas in an effort to increase growth and access to timber through throughout the state. The Department of Transportation budget, just a few highlights. First, there is the federal grant award for the Rural Ferry Grants. So this is funding to address the Tustamina replacement and the associated match using toll credits for this program. There are also two projects. One is just over $4 million for the Copper River Highway Wood Canyon Bridges and Trails, and then as well as $3 million for the Williamsport-Iliamna Intermodal Connector. These are road and bridges and trail projects. And then lastly, there is $2.5 million. Just going to sum that up as PFAS, statewide per, and I'm sorry, substances. I cannot pronounce that second word. So essentially, this is replacing vehicles that are not federally eligible to be replaced within the department so that they're no longer PFAS related and have a different source to fight fires. Those are the comments that I had.
Senator Teal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just Director Sanders, could we request a breakdown on the truck replacements? I noticed the backup all talks about UGF. My understanding is that the FAA will participate in truck replacements for this purpose. If we could just get how that plan is put together, appreciate this item.
Yep, absolutely. Through the chair, Senator Keel, we can follow up with that.
And then on the Marine Highway, if you could help the committee a little bit on the toll credits, and in particular dealing with the FY24 operations, which is between today and end of June. My understanding is we did not receive the federal funds that the department was anticipating, and there may be a shortfall this year, next year. Can you give us kind of a brief synopsis of what we're kind of looking at with the Marine Highway?
To the chair, Senator Stedman, I am not aware of a shortfall in federal authority. So if we could call on Don Pannone, Admin Services Director for the Department of Transportation, he may be able to address your question.
Mr. Bernholm, are you online here? Are you on this list? Doesn't look like it.
Apologies, sir.
That's all right. He won't get out of his duty. You could get back to us, but the concern is cash flow, the current year's cash flow ending in June and then FY25. My understanding is one of the other territories of the country picked up a portion of those federal funds that the state of Alaska was counting on, leaving us short. So we need to take a look at that and figure out what we want to do. Also, in that update, if you could have them take a look at the schedule that's implemented, what their cash flow needs will be, because there might be less ships running than we anticipated in the budget and, frankly, funded.
Chair Sedman, absolutely. We will follow up with the committee.
Okay.
So continuing on to slide 17, this slide was requested to be updated from a presentation that was provided last year. essentially providing not only on the right-hand side a snapshot of the vacancies as of December 2023, but as well a historical look at the vacancies that our state has facing. Notably, we've gone from over 89% filled to just at above 83% filled positions, which does result in significant number of vacancies. But I will note we are seeing an upward trajectory, which is good news, but not where we want to be. We continue to use tools such as letters of agreements to address critical life, health, safety positions in attracting and retaining and maintaining those positions as filled in the state to ensure that the services that we provide those across the state of Alaska are met. I would like to also note that the Department of Administration did solicit and enter into a contract for a statewide salary survey in hopes that by June of 2024, we will have a report back on the comparison of salaries for state employees in the state to other sectors and provide valuable feedback on where we may need to make adjustments in salaries.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you. Is the state looking at any workforce culture situations? I mean, obviously, it looks like the Department of Law and DMVA and maybe DEC are doing something better in their departments and compared to some of the other issues that we've heard of the recent years about some toxic work environments and hostilities happening and hazing happening in the workplace.
Thank you for that question, Senator Wilson. Yes, there are conversations occurring at the direction of the governor's office. Several agencies, and including myself, the Office of Management and Budget, are discussing ways that we can improve our workforce culture across the state of Alaska and incentivize working for the state and ensuring that employees feel valued and have the work-life balance and healthy options while they engage as state employees.
Thank you.
So when you do your analysis and you look at the vacancies, are you going to compare it to other states?
Through the chair, or to the chair, Senator Stedman, I don't recall if the contract required comparisons to other states. I would believe it would. I would need to check with Department of Administration on explicitly what that language said in the contract.
If you could check, that would be appreciated, because my understanding, a lot of states have, they're in a similar position as Alaska with vacancies. And one of the members here had a conversation. Senator Wilson, you want to share that a little bit or not?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was going to wait to another hearing for that, but
that's fine. You can wait. That's fine. The concern is that this vacancy structure is pretty much nationwide. And it'd be nice to have that kind of a review, so we're not just looking at Alaska and, in a little bubble. I'd also suggest that when they take a look at the salaries, it's a component, and it hasn't been expressed here the last couple of years, that it appears that our lower end workforce is possibly the weaker area on the salary schedule. In other words, the lower end needs to be increased to attract and retain entry-level positions. That we look at the education system also and the comparison of wages around. Because it all, even though it's not as direct as the departments and the agencies, it's still a responsibility of the state to deal with education. So I think that needs to be looked at also. And they appear to have a very similar issue, which runs around the nation. So that report, I think you mentioned it in the past. When do you expect to have that data set back to us so we could have that factor that in our discussions?
Chair Stedman, the report is supposed to be complete by June of 2024, so June 30th, 2024, at the end of this fiscal year.
Okay. So we'll take that up next winter?
Chair Sedman, I anticipate that that study and the results of that study will be discussion points for the upcoming budget that comes out in the following year. Yes.
Yes, that would be good. That's what we want. We want to solve the solve problems. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Lacey, one of the concerns I have in our in the Northwest Alaska is we've had difficulty with keeping the airports open, especially, and we can, this is a good example today here in Juneau. It's a full-time job just trying to keep the runways clean. But one of the issues has that has come up, and I see you've got a vacancy rate up there of roughly 17% or 18% for the workers. Are there any incentives that you know of that are trying to make it so that the heavy equipment operators are going to be recruited and retained? Because that's what seems to be shutting down the airports. We don't have enough personnel to go and run the heavy equipment up there to make sure the runways are clear. And it's not just an inconvenience, it's a life and safety issue because some of those people are trying to get out to the hospital down in Anchorage. Can you just fill me in on what you know about it and what efforts are being presented for that?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I know that there are conversations about across many agencies about finding incentives to ensure that those critical life, health, safety items are addressed, such as ensuring our airports are open and operational. Yes. I don't have a specific letter of agreement that I can reference off at the top of my head, but we can follow up with the committee if there are any specific to those positions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Well, I got, just before we jump to the next slide, just for those watching at home and they hear us talking about the request for employment, adding more workers to various departments. And then when we look at this list, it looks like they got lots of room in all of them. So can you put that in layman's language, why we would authorize additional hires when we can't fill up the vacancies that we have? Why don't we fill them first, and then when they run out, add more seats to fill in different agencies?
Chair Stedman, that's an excellent question, and something we review very closely as we're walking through the budget requests. Agencies do have significant vacancies, and we have asked agencies to continually evaluate, especially positions that have been vacant for a long time, in some cases more than a year, what services are they not providing, or how are those services being provided by someone else or through a different function? And we try to ensure that if we are adding positions, we've reviewed what is available out there that is vacant, and use those positions, try to utilize those positions first. For example, in the Department of Labor Workforce and Development, they have repurposed several positions for their new office in the Commissioner for Citizenship Assistance. So what you'll see throughout the budget is transfers of positions and reclassifications to meet the needs of the agency while not adding new positions where we have existing ones that have been vacant. But we also want to ensure that, for example, in the Department of Public Safety, that we're not repurposing commissioned troopers that we know we need across the state to be filled. And so you'll see in the Department of Public Safety's budget, there's no new trooper positions. There are additional support or investigative positions where they would prefer to retain the trooper positions and find add new positions to fill the functions that we're looking to expand upon.
So before we go to Senator Wilson's question, he's got a follow-up on this one. So we'll just take one, pick any department here. We got low teens or almost 10% up to 20, a little over 20%. What happens to that when we appropriate money for salaries and benefits? And for instance, we'll just take the first one, Department of Admin, it just happened to be at the top of the list, 15.2%, right? So that, does that mean that they're going to have 15.2% cash laying around at the end in their department that we could roll forward to next year? Or what happens to the cash that we authorize to be expensed in salaries and benefits, and like the DCCED is almost 19%. Can we just give them a haircut for 19% here at the table? And so help me understand that in layman's terms for those watching at home.
Thank you for that question. So I'm going to try and address it with two pieces. The first is, so the legislature doesn't fully fund every single position in the budget. We have a vacancy factor that's applied. Granted, it won't be at the 15.2% in all areas, but each agency's budget does have a vacancy buffer. So I'm going to refer to it as short funding in the anticipation that not every position will always be filled in the budget. The second part to that is in many areas, we are entering into letters of agreement, as I mentioned, to temporarily address where we are having shortfalls or where we want to retain employees or recruit employees. And some of that funding that is not being utilized for vacant positions will be used to cover those letters of agreements until we can get positions filled and hopefully maintain those positions into the future.
So in a shorter answer to that, what you're telling me is that we authorize X amount of positions, but when we actually fund the budget, knowing that some of them aren't going to be filled, we just fund the agency to a lower number.
Senator Stedman, that is the most concise way I've heard that phrased. Yes, thank you.
Okay. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it be possible, maybe the Department of Administration or your office get back sort of in terms of the vacancy, in terms of whether either skilled positions or level entry positions that we're looking at that fills the majority of this vacancy rate? I know I think that NCSL just came out with an article about how many states are now getting rid of some of the degree requirements for some of these positions and looking more skill-based. I know that the governor's office tried to do that last year. Just wondering how that's going, if that's helped with some of the skill, with the positions vacancy rates, and just trying to get an update on some of those items.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, yes, we can follow up with the Department of Administration to get you that information.
Other questions on this? Okay. The previous question that I was asking is a point of confusion within the building and outside the building on our budget. Some, especially newer members in the legislature, some that have been around a while, think these vacancies are just piles of cash laying around that we could just sweep and cut the budget. If it was that easy, believe me, we would have done it. Okay, go ahead and on to slide 18, please.
All right, so slide 18 is our last slide. Alaska Statute 3707020B requires the governor to publish a 10-year fiscal outlook that balances revenues with the uses of funds, while providing essential state services and protecting the economic stability of the state. This slide represents a condensed version of that plan that was released on December 14th and can be found on OMB's website, the full plan can. I've also included a link on the next slide for those that would like quick access to that report. So 10-year plans, over time, have varied from year to year. Governor Dunleavy has proposed several 10-year plans since he took office. And this year's approach was to present a status quo 10-year outlook. As you can see, it starts again with uses of funds, the sources of the funds, and provides a deposit or a draw. And in 2024 and 2025, those numbers align with the fiscal summary that we spoke to at the beginning of the presentation yesterday. Lastly, we have the reserve balances at the bottom, which provide what the balance would be at the end of each fiscal year. Just a few notes. We use a full permanent fund dividend amount, statutory dividend, for each year from 2025 through 2034. The operating budget uses a 1.5% inflation. I know there have been conversations about the high rate of inflation. That number is something that could be adjusted. It is just the number that we used for the purposes of the slide. deck. We use the Department of Revenue's fall forecast for revenue projections going out into the future. And we use sources such as debt tables or projected public education funds for items that we have projections out into the future. I'll note that the status quo is clearly unsustainable with savings being depleted in FY 2027. The governor acknowledges that some combination of revenue measures or reductions in spending will need to occur before those savings accounts are depleted, and that policymakers in the state will need to continue to have conversations to address the fiscal issues, the structural fiscal issues that the state is facing. And I'll just note lastly that the governor is willing to have those conversations moving forward in recognition that this is unsustainable.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for those comments. If the governor believes that cuts need to be taken or revenue measures need to be considered, the revenues take time to get implemented. Can we anticipate any form of revenue measures from this administration to address the structural deficit that we're seeing, even though it includes a full dividend?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, Governor Dunley does not have any proposed revenue measures at this time, but again is willing to have conversation that there are legislators that would like to work towards implementing those revenue measures.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Due to the enthusiasm of the red numbers on the sheet, I've asked Ms. Sanders if she could update that after the governor's amendment deadlines and adjustments are due on the 14th of February, so we can get a bit more of an inclusion of what we're looking at. And then I think the committee should again consider shortening up the time frame to 2027, 2028, somewhere in that range, and start looking at the cash flow from time now till then. I think it would be unacceptable to hand the next administration, whoever that may be, whatever party it may be, no flexibility and no cushion for volatile oil prices, in other words, a liquidated CBR. And as we'll see, the permanent fund is constrained by the capital markets and their asset allocation on how much they can deliver to us. So, you know, running out of cash flow is just unacceptable. And not only that, it would reverse our goal of trying to increase the financial rating of the state and increase our cost of debt. So it's just unacceptable from multiple directions. And we'll have, when we have these run, we'll change that dividend rate. We all recognize that's a big portion from the statutory dividend to whatever numbers of dividends that the committee members want to see, whatever ratio that is. And I would say zero dividends is unacceptable as dividends that bankrupt the state. It's got to be some combination or something in the middle. So we'll have this back before us, but I think there's some things in here that aren't included, so the numbers would even look worse in that regard. But I think it's ready to recognize the statutory dividend put together 40 years ago doesn't fit the current structure and financial times of the state or the permanent fund. So we'll bring that back, and then I'll work with the committee members on what they want to see in it and ledge finance. And my expectation is those presentations are going to be very, very similar to what ledge finance has been bringing to us since maybe 2017 or some number. I'm sure that Ledge Finance Director will remind us the first time he put that model together. Hasn't changed that much. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go back to the disastrous position of the fishing industry. I guess, number one, you're going to look at that, take a second look at it for FY 2025. The situation is so dire, I would suggest or request that you look at it and consider addressing that to a supplemental as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments from the committee members? Final comments from the new OMB director?
I would just like to say, we are only a few days into this legislative session, and I am new to my role, but I am looking forward to working with each one of you. Please reach out to me if you have questions for me, or I can follow up on information. I'm looking forward to helping in any way that I can.
Yeah, and I would like to thank you on the 10-year plan that you just didn't use hokey numbers to plug the debt, some future revenue that's just fantasy in the sky. It is what it is, and we can't make the correct policy decision unless we actually see what we're dealing with. So it is appreciated that you didn't do that.
Thank you.
And then we'll update those numbers, and it's going to be what it's going to be, and we'll deal with it. I'm here at the table. Okay, with that, that'll conclude this morning's meeting. I'd like to thank OMB and all the OMB staff and all the support, budgetary staff that supports OMB putting this together. It was appreciated. And this afternoon, we're going to have a meeting starting at 1:30. We're going to have Senate Bill 88, which is retirement systems, defined benefit conversion on the retirement system. It says option, but I don't think it's much of an option, more of a conversion. And we're going to have that. I think is it public testimony today? Okay, no public testimony today, but invited testimony. Invited testimony today, 1:30. We'll see the committee members back at 1:30. Some of us will be a little late. There's we have a press availability. But after that, we should have a full committee. We are adjourned.